Mr. Pipes, it's a privilege to have you on our TV.
Thank you. Honored to be with you.
Thank you so much for your time. And sir, do you remember where were you when the September 11 attacks happened? What did you feel? What was your first reaction, your first thoughts?
I was at home on my way to the office when I had a call from a television station informing me that a plane had hit one of the towers in New York. That changed my life. And I was very busy for the next few years trying to understand this phenomenon and trying to explain it.
What was your first reaction, your first thoughts?
Well, my thought is that this is the radical Muslims, the Islamists. But I dared not say that because I didn't want to be wrong. So I had to be very careful. For about a week, I couldn't quite express myself until the U.S. government finally confirmed that it was Islamists. It was the people that I studied.
Could you tell me how the attacks affected your life?
Well, it turned my life upside down. I had a career, I was busy, but this made everything far more busy because these are the people I had been studying for decades already. And there was a great deal of media interest and government interest in trying to understand them. And I was one of those people who was asked to explain it. So it was a very, very busy time. And it was a situation where it was horrible, but at the same time, this horrible event allowed the country to understand better the enemy it was facing.
You know, I want to ask about the impact, the attacks' impact on the USA. I mean, both on government, the authorities, and on the American society. Could you tell us more about that?
Well, the immediate impact was to bring Americans together. The slogan was, "United we stand." Americans are together. But that very quickly fell apart within 3-4 months. And after that, it became a matter of argument and debate. Who's to blame? Why did this happen? What are the implications? So it did not bring us together for more than a brief period. It led to more argument and more differences between Americans.
And you have some connections also with Europe. You have Polish-Jewish roots. And could you tell us how the attack affected Europe and the world, in your opinion? I mean, what do you think about that from the perspective of those last 20 years?
Well, initially, again, there was great sympathy for the United States. It was the only time in NATO's history that NATO got together to fight an enemy, the only time. But it quickly, again, became a subject of great argument and difference. And we see that now 20 years later, a great argument and difference over the causes and the implications of the Islamist phenomenon. Most recently, just a few weeks ago in Afghanistan, but it continues. It's a major issue in France. It's a major issue in Belarus. It's all over. There was just an election in Morocco. It is a very prominent and divisive issue. What does this mean? Where does this come from? How to deal with this radical form of Islam?
But how did the attacks impact on the U.S., you know, from this 20 years perspective? What did it change? How Americans changed?
I would say that the number one implication was that the U.S. government began wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, wars that went on for many, many years, and they created divisions between left and right, between supporters of the wars and opponents of the wars. This was the number one result of the attacks on 9/11.
Irina Fallaci, in her book, The Rage and the Pride, praised the unity of Americans after the attack. And I think, how did you do that? How were you, the Americans, capable of establishing the unity and sacrifice in the face of such a tragedy in that moment?
Well, it was rather easy. when one is under attack, the country comes together. But this was not an ongoing attack in the sense of planes being hijacked all the time. It was not like, say, Pearl Harbor, which was the beginning of a major war. This was a one-time incident. And therefore, a few months after the incident occurred, Americans went back to arguing, and indeed argued more. And I would say that today's very difficult situation in the United States, with the left and the right are more divided than any time since the 1970s, is due in part to 9/11, is due to the arguments that began then and have spread to many other topics.
And your father, Richard Pipes, was an advisor to President Ronald Reagan. And I'm observing the USA from the distance. And as you said, American society is divided now. And you know, how would you agree with that? That you are so divided because of politics, or something different reasons?
Well, yes, it's politics, but it's becoming more than politics. It's becoming a whole way of viewing the world, whether it's vaccination or abortion or Afghanistan. There are profound divisions in the way in which left and right see the same issues. They don't agree on the basic facts. So to go back to 9/11, the basic argument was, is this a radical totalitarian enemy that attacked us? Or was it Americans who had behaved badly, who had been aggressive, who caused this? Is it their fault or is it our fault? Big difference, fundamental difference. It was not an argument over tactics, over what the nature of the response should be. It was far more profound. It was over who is at fault. And that kind of difference you can see throughout American life now. And it's very difficult. It's disappointing. It's a problem. And I would date it to 20 years ago, to the attacks on 9/11.
And going back to the President Reagan, if he tried to unite the Americans, how was his ideas for unite the society? Could you tell us about that?
Well, certainly any president wishes to have the country behind him and united. But I would say that Reagan stands out for having ideas. He was ideological. He had beliefs, and he was ready to fight for those beliefs. And if others disagreed with him, well, that's fine. He fought for his beliefs. He did not accede to them. He did not compromise. He tried not to compromise. So he was, in fact, he stands out in American presidential history as one of the few presidents who really had a series of ideas that he wished to implement. One can't really say that about most of his predecessors or successors. Barack Obama would fit that same pattern. I don't think that George W. Bush does. I don't think that Donald Trump did. I don't think that Joe Biden does. They don't have ideas.
You talk about beliefs. What kind of beliefs Ronald Reagan had?
Well, essentially, they're conservative beliefs in the freedom of the individual, the free market, strong opposition to communism. There were some simple, basic ideas which had been somewhat lost, especially by Jimmy Carter before him. And so he came into office with these basic ideas and promoted them for 8 years and, to a certain extent, changed the country and brought a number of Americans who were at first skeptical, reluctant, brought them to his side.
I want to talk about today America. You said that you're divided between Democrats, Republicans, leftists, conservatives. And do you have any ideas for how to unite your society or make it better, you know, to be united?
That's a tough question. I wish I did. I wish others did. No, I don't think we're at the point where we can find those ideas yet. There are many attempts to bridge the differences between left and right. But as I said before, the differences are so deep that it's difficult to find common ground, difficult to find people who are willing to work with each other and find solutions that work for both sides. No, I do not. I'm sorry to say, I do not have any great ideas.
Arina Falati wrote in her book that it used to be patriotism on you as your foundation of your unity in the States. Are you patriots, in general, Americans still?
The country is divided. Half the country is patriotic, is nationalistic, is proud, believes that we are a great country, and half is not, sees the country as flawed, as aggressive, as racist, and so forth. And that's the fundamental divide. People who like the United States, proud of it, and people who don't like it are embarrassed by it. And so it's roughly half-half. With, in general, the critical side, the left side, gaining because the left controls virtually all the great institutions, the education system, the media, the corporations now. That's the new thing, corporations. Didn't used to be the case. And more than that, they're going further and further left and making an issue of new topics. I don't know, transgender. This was not a topic 5 years ago, and now it's a significant topic. Endemic racism. These were much smaller topics in the past than they are today. So it's a real fight taking place in the United States between those who are proud of the country and those who are not proud of it, who think it's very flawed, and very flawed, more flawed than other countries. Big debate.
Coming back to the effects of September 11, what do you think about the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan?
Well, I was never eager for nation building. I believe that there was an extraordinary American achievement in 1945 in rebuilding Germany, Austria, Italy, Japan, and making them modern, successful, democratic countries. This was extraordinary. And it never happened before. But that went so well that it became an assumption in American politics that if you go into a country and you defeat the government, then you fix it. You build the nation. You make it look like the United States. And, well, 2001 in Afghanistan, 2003 in Iraq were not 1945. And for many reasons, it didn't work. So I was opposed from the beginning. I didn't think it would succeed. Yes, get rid of the Taliban. Yes, get rid of Saddam Hussein, but then leave. Give some money, find a strong man who can take control of the country, and then leave. It's not what we did. And it was doomed. Now, it didn't have to end as badly as it did. 2,500 American troops were achieving quite a bit until a month ago. It wasn't a great success, but at least it was not the disaster that we now see. So, I blame George W. Bush for entering into a nation-building enterprise that was a mistake, but I blame Joe Biden for leaving in this catastrophic fashion. Just, and worse, not only was it catastrophic, but he doesn't admit to it. He doesn't acknowledge that it was a disaster. He pretends that it was excellent. Couldn't have been done better. This is, again, this is a divide. His supporters will tell you it was wonderful. And his critics, like myself, will tell you, was awful. And there's very little room for compromise. It's either wonderful or terrible. There are few people who say, well, it was okay. It wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible. No, it's basically people say it was well done, and people say it was a disaster.
So you're not optimistic regarding the Joe Biden's presidency?
No, I'm not. In part, he's mentally not all there. In part, he's arrogant. In part, he's inflexible. In part, he thinks he knows better than anyone else. No, I'm not optimistic. On the other hand, I personally hope that he is mentally fine and he survives, because I'm even more worried about the vice president. So it's not a very happy prospect.
I'm looking at your Twitter, and if I may ask some question, because you wrote, it's some kind of connection with our today topic. In France, the trial of terrorists who conducted Bataclan attack in 2015 is starting, and you wrote on Twitter that you are skeptical. And why is that, if you can answer?
There's this enormous trial, the biggest in French history, with 14 defendants, 300 lawyers, 1,700 plaintiffs in a new building with intense security through as part of central Paris. And what is this about? We know that these individuals were guilty. Why has it taken 6 years, almost 6 years? It took place in November 2015. It's now September 2021. Why this huge spectacle? Why not have just a normal trial with each defendant being tried separately with a few lawyers and a few plaintiffs? Why this enormous spectacle? I don't think it's going to come out well.
And do you think that what is going on and where going on in the Europe, and I mean the Islamic terrorist attacks on people in Europe, is this connected with the, you know, September 11 in America?
Well, it is in a sense that both are violent jihadi attacks. Europe has not experienced anything quite so huge. Beslan, I think, was the worst incident in Europe, in Russia. 2003 or four, in Madrid in 2003, I believe, London in 2007, but none were anywhere as big as the American attack, as the attack on the United States. Look, there are two forms, as in other radical movements, there are two forms of promoting the movement. One is through the system, and one is through revolution, through violence. Say it's the difference between the socialists and the communists. One is working through the system and the other is looking to overthrow, have revolution. And so you see the same difference among the Islamists. Some seek to achieve their goals through education, philanthropy, the law, politics, media, and so forth, do not use violence. And others do use violence. I believe the violent form is less threatening than the nonviolent form. We have military services, intelligence services, law enforcement, who can fight the violent ones. They don't have any real accomplishments. Look at 9/11, the biggest attack of all. What did it achieve for them? I would argue to you it did not work. It did not help them. It did not overthrow the government of the United States. It did not cause Americans to surrender. No. Wasn't terribly effective, and neither are the attacks in Europe. The big ones I mentioned are the smaller ones that take place quite often. What is effective is working through the system, and that is taking place all the time in Western Europe, and not in Central Europe, but in Western Europe and in North America. And that is, to me, very troubling. I'm less worried about violence and more worried about the promotion of Islamism through the system.
Sir, my last question. What is the main lesson, you think, after this 20 years after 9/11 for Americans, and not only for Americans, also for Poles and for you know, citizens of the whole world? In your opinion, the main lesson after this 20 years?
My main lesson from 9/11 is that Islamism, radical Islam, is a great threat to the entire world, to Muslims and non-Muslims alike, and must be taken seriously. This is the great ideology of our time. It's not fascism, it's not communism, it is Islamism. Now, there are other dangers China is a great danger. It doesn't have an ideology. It doesn't have a body of ideas that are appealing to people around the world. But Islamism, like fascism and communism, does have appeal. You can be anyone from anywhere, and you can be attracted to it. You can convert to Islam. You can adopt this worldview. You can be a Muslim who adopts this worldview. You can be a non-Muslim who adopts this worldview. It is the most powerful ideology of our time. And 9/11 was its great, spectacular act of aggression. But it's going on all the time without great, spectacular acts of aggression. It's taking place all the time. Promotion of this radical utopian ideology.
And as we see in Afghanistan, the Islam and the communism, Chinese communism and Russia, they're cooperating each other. We see that in Afghanistan.
There are plenty of dangers. Russia is another danger. But it's not, Russia no longer has a body of ideas. Putin is not promoting an ideology that people around the world will say, oh, that's attractive. No, it's Russian nationalism, Chinese nationalism. But Islamism is not nationalism. It's a body of ideas that can attract anyone, anywhere, regardless of age, color, sex, anything. It is an attractive ideology, just as fascism and communism are, or were. They're less so now. Islamism is now the vital, vibrant, aggressive, and fearsome ideology of our time.
It was Daniel Pipes. Thank you so much for your comment. And we send many regards from Poles to Americans.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time. Eunika Hoicka, thank you for watching.